Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. If anthropology is the study of human society, culture, and development, then why does it often seem so at odds with American Indian studies? Well, it turns out there are some very good reasons for the clash, but Sebastian Brown doesn't think it always has to be so. He's Associate Professor of Anthropology and Director of the American Indian Studies Programming at Iowa State University. Dr. Brown is in Vermilion tonight for a lecture called Bearing Wisdom on the World, Anthropology and American Indian Studies in the Reflections of Vine Deloria Jr. and Beatrice Medicine. I spoke with him last week. Where do you want to begin with this? Because it's really about the intersection between anthropology and American Indian Studies with two very special people sort of in the center. Yes. Just give us an overview of the talk.
So the talk is what you said. I mean, really, it's about this intersection between anthropology and American Indian Studies. And I think for some time now, this has been seen as kind of a division. That is, anthropology and American Indian Studies oftentimes seem to come to things from opposite ends and therefore have some difficulties with each other sometimes.
Talk about those opposite ends. What are those opposite worldviews that we're speaking of?
Well, I think anthropology, you know, traditionally anthropology has looked at, you know, culture as kind of traditional culture and has tried its best to avoid like anything that has to do with contemporary, culture and communities and has tried to reconstruct this traditional culture. And I think American Indian Studies, on the other hand, has tried to look at things from a political viewpoint, from a sovereignty viewpoint, and has kind of found a need to emphasize the differences between Native communities and non-Native communities. And so also sometimes overlooks, I think, what is actually going on in Native communities. And so I think what the talk is really about is how we can bridge those differences and how we can come to a perspective that takes Native communities on their own terms and can create a perspective for Native communities that take their own experiences fully into account. And I want to get there by looking at, from my perspective, I think that's kind of like what B. Medicine and, you know, not just Vine Deloria Jr., but also, you know, Ella Deloria and these other people really advocated for.
So your background is as an anthropologist. When do you remember bumping up against that intersection and thinking about it for the first time?
Okay, yes. So you're right. Yes, I got my PhD in anthropology, and then I got a job in an American Indian Studies department.
Right.
And that's exactly the point where I bumped up against against this. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, you know, I was fully aware that anthropologists sometimes don't have the best of reputations in Native communities, right? I mean, that's pretty clear, you know. But when I walked into one of my first American Indian Studies classes and I said something like, you know, I'm new here, my name is Sebastian, and I'm an anthropologist, and one of the students raised their hand and said, oh, well, my dad tells me that the only worst thing that anybody could be but an anthropologist is a Native anthropologist.
Oh, wow.
I actually knew her dad, we became friends, you know, it was not something that I took personally, you know, but it kind of demonstrated to me that I really had to rethink kind of what I was doing and where I was going with this.
So the best thing to do when confronted with a comment like that is to take it seriously in some ways and say, where is the truth in that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, yeah, you have to. I think you have to take it seriously, right? On the other hand, you can't take it I mean, in a sense, but not in the sense that you would be offended, right?
Right.
I mean, you can't. I mean, yeah, we have to take it seriously that there are people around the world, right, that have been highly offended by anthropologists,
mm-hmm.
and that do not want to talk with anthropologists for very good reasons, right?
I guess I mean instead of just jumping to defending a profession or defending yourself, and you know, I'm not like that, is to sort of let the full truth of it, you know, enter and enter your work in some way.
Yeah, I mean that's what I've been. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I've been trying to do, and I think that's really the best strategy.
Yeah. Let's talk about.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Bee Medicine. Tell us about her for people who don't know her.
So Bee Medicine was this amazing woman from Wakapala, who became. An anthropologist, a highly regarded anthropologist on the Northern Plains, and had, you know, at a time when women in academia in general, and especially Native women in academia, had a very, very hard time to get their voices heard and to be taken for full, and had really good thoughts about what it meant to be an anthropologist and yet to be Lakota, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she can teach us a lot about what it means to first of all, to live in an academic world and be successful in an academic world while still being grounded in a community, wherever that may be, but also what it means to be Native, and also to study Native people from kind of an outsider perspective, right, at the same time.
Hmm. And Vine Deloria Jr., Custer died for your sins.
Yes, Custer died for your sins. That's what he's known for,
yes,
right?
a provocative writer, never afraid to say what he felt needed to be said.
Never, yeah. Exactly. And always, I find always with humor, right? I mean,
right.
he has this great humor in his work. And you know, I mean, Custer died for his sins was his first book, right? And he's prolific. He was a prolific writer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, when I read Custer died for his sins, which most people remember for his attack on anthropology, I just love it because... I think what he's doing is he's telling his friends, anthropologists, who were his friends. Right? He was great friends with many anthropologists, like what they could do better and what they shouldn't do. And I think it's a very honest way of addressing what the discipline should do better, because he thought that the discipline is actually really important for communities. It could be important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I see when I read Custer died for his sins and when I read things that he wrote, you know, towards the end of his life in the late 1990s, I see a thread that goes through his writings from beginning to end, where he says, basically, you people have to be honest. You have to deal with us as contemporary people. You cannot constantly put us in the past. You have to deal with communities as they are today. And I kind of take that as one of my inspirations for my work.
Okay, what does that look like in practice as an anthropologist?
I think what it looks like is that we can't constantly tell people that what they're doing today looks very different from what they were doing 150 years ago, and that is wrong. You know, mm-hmm. And not that people do that all the time, but I think there's this expectation still that, you know, how should Lakota people, for example, you know, work in their economy? Like, how should they share things? How should they live? How, you know, and then these expectations, because they're so popularized, become, you know, turn into politics and laws and regulations and things like that. And
a law, you know, or regulation that would keep a culture in the past. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So if you go to Washington, D.C. and you don't, you know, and you show up as a lawyer in a suit,
uh-huh.
You know, do people really think of you as a Native person, right? Or do you have to somehow have, you know, turquoise jewelry or a headdress or something like that, or a cowboy hat these days, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, should tribes be able to operate as capitalist economies, right? Should they rather still orient themselves towards, you know, what people call traditional economies, right, where they would avoid integration into the market and so on. And I think what Ryan DeLauro Jr. was trying to say is that we live today, and Native peoples, just like any other people in the world, are contemporary modern people, and we have to acknowledge that, and we have to take them as contemporary modern people. Mm. Now, in their own culture, right? That doesn't mean, and also, right, that doesn't mean that the culture is lost, right? That there's no more Lakota culture, right? Mm-hmm. Lakota people still can do things differently from other people, right? But just that we approach today's Native cultures as today's Native cultures and not constantly expect people to behave like they did in the 1890s.
Hmm. How did you come across the work of Beatrice Medicine or Deloria, and what has your relationship been with those two intellectuals and thinkers? Were you ever able to meet them? Were you just sort of piecing together their philosophy from their work?
I met them, but not. I never had any, you know, great personal relations or anything. I've met them at conferences, but they were good friends with my dissertation advisor. And then I really got engaged with their work actually after they had passed away, unfortunately, because I had to rethink what American Indian Studies means to me, how it should be, you know, how I thought it should be done. And so I got deeper and deeper involved in kind of seeking their guidance through the literature.
Hmm. Do you wish you could still talk to them and have that personal relationship with them as a sort of a living relationship?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, you know.
what would you ask? You know, what is it that, you know, as you look at their work, would you like them to clarify for you?
You know, I'm never sure what I would ask them. I think I would just like to be in their presence. Like, I would just like to sit and listen to what they have to say. I don't know if I have any specific questions, but I would like to learn from them.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, oftentimes I think we approach those relationships in kind of the wrong way by just wanting to ask very specific things. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're missing then is kind of the experience of learning from people as a whole, like as people, where they express themselves in many different ways, and where, you know, I mean,
right.
Somebody recently told me that, you know, there's an infinite number of Ryan DeLaurias out there, right? Everybody has their own opinion on Ryan DeLaurias. and you know, there are many people who don't agree with me. That's fine, right? I just take him and his work as an inspiration for a starting point to think through these issues.
Right. You mentioned that anthropology can be very good and a positive force in a community. How so? When it comes to a tribal community or a Native American community?
I think, so first of all, I think many people make the mistake and say that anthropology can explain the culture to the community. I don't think that's true. That's not the work of anthropology, right? People in communities know what they're doing. People in communities know their own culture. And so anthropology can work, though, for good, I think, by explaining what is going on in communities to other people. That is, by translating the culture to other people who need to understand the culture, for example, with Lakota, the federal government, right? The state, the neighboring communities, who need to understand these communities on in their own terms. And so the way that I think anthropology can work for good is by being as honest as it can be about what it can find in terms of how Lakota communities work. And to translate that into language that other people, non-Lakota people, can understand. This is never going to be, of course, the full picture of what's going on in the community, right? But it can help in terms of building understanding that can lead to bridges, clearing up misunderstandings, clearing up facts, things like that. And of course, people tell me, well, why can't Lakota people themselves do that? And of course, I'm not saying anthropologists are superheroes or anything like that. Right. anybody can do, right?
Yeah, and you're not saying that Lakota people can't be anthropologists.
Oh, no.
Right, yeah,
not,
you're not saying
right?
that either.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely
right.
not. Yeah. I think most Lakota people are anthropologists because they need to understand American culture. Right? And so I think where anthropology could be at its best is just by bearing witness. And I think that alone would do actually a lot of good for communities if it's done in the right way. Mm. That is, by saying, these are the issues that, for example, the federal government should focus on. This is how the community works. These are the values that we can see in this culture, and so maybe we should adopt policies, to allow for these values. These are the ways that people live, and so, maybe we shouldn't force a different way of life on these communities, right? And I think that's, in the end, it's not a very concrete or specific way that leads to like specific results, but it builds a larger understanding of communities and how we should engage them and deal with them on their own terms.
Let's see if we can come up with an example of how that might work, and some way that a conversation, a smart anthropology conversation, could help bridge the gap. Does anything come to mind right away to you as an example where you think, there's some misunderstandings here, and if we really work together?
Well, yeah. I mean, not to get too political, but I mean, what comes to mind immediately right now is Dakota Access.
That's right? Exactly what came to my mind too. So let's go there.
Okay, let's go there.
Yeah.
So I think, I think it was in part a series of misunderstandings, and in part a series of misinformation, and in part a series of expectations that from all sides that were just not meeting with the reality of the community. And to be quite honest, I still don't think anybody has, for example, looked into what the community of Cannonball thought about Dakota Access. The focus was on the protests. The focus was on the company, and nobody actually went and looked into what I think the tribe, Standing Rock, or the community, Cannonball, what people in those communities actually thought. And
so the tribal chairman spoke out.
Of course.
On behalf of the tribe. And I remember, seeing those videos and hearing him on these airwaves as well.
Absolutely. And yes, but I do think that the tribal chairman, for example, had a different perspective, slightly different perspective from many of the people who served as spokesperson for the camps. For the different camps, okay. The different camps had different perspectives, that there were slightly different agendas, and that some people in the communities had, slightly different perspectives from the chairman. And none of this, I don't mean to say, right, that therefore we shouldn't listen to the tribal chairman or shouldn't listen to the camps or shouldn't listen to protests. I mean, the protests were really important, right? But I do think that in the realm of all of this, what the media then did was they ran with some very specific perspectives. And I know that the tribal chairman tried to put his voice out, but I do think that on the whole scheme of things, the agenda of the tribe sometimes was not the first thing that the media coverage latched onto.
Right. And you certainly can't assume that everyone in that situation would speak with one voice either.
Absolutely not. No, right. No. Which is also something that people often do, right? We look at indigenous communities and we say, well, why don't they all speak with one voice? That's a problem. That's tribalism or, you know, right. However people. And, well, look at America. I mean, did we all speak with one voice?
Right.
I don't think
exactly.
So.
Exactly, yeah. That's one thing that I noticed. There was an assumption there of, you know, what do the Native Americans want? Well,
yeah, exactly.
You know, what? Ask 10 individuals, you will get 10 individual answers wherever you go. Yeah. Are there certain truths, though, that an anthropologist could look at and say, this is what you need to understand? You know, talk to a journalist who's going to cover it and say, this is what you need to understand culturally that's going to help you do your job better.
Well, I think one of the first ones is exactly what you just brought up, right? I mean, one of the first cultural truths that journalists need to understand is that no tribe speaks with one voice. And there is probably a majority of voices that comes together, right? But that's a process that takes time. And so to just go into a community and hold the microphone under just anybody's nose and say, give me the definite answer as to what this community wants and needs is not a good way to get at reality.
Right.
I mean, I think the second one is that if you deal with something like Dakota Access, that I would tell a journalist is listen to your tribal chairman. You know, because if there is somebody who is a spokesperson for the tribe as a political unit, it is a tribal chairman or chairwoman, right? And so what they say carries weight, and listen to them. And I think the third one is you need to understand the nuances of what people say in terms of their own political reality and their own social and economic reality.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Right? You can't just assume that they have the same experiences, the same and live in the same realities as people in New York City do.
Right.
There are some local, really local and regional realities that they respond to because they're looking out for the welfare of their people. Right? And so... I think those would be the three points.
It's going to be a fascinating conversation when you come here to Vermilion. Anything else that you wanted to sort of cover or preview from that, your upcoming talk? Yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah, I hope it's going to be a fascinating conversation. I hope there will be a conversation. Yeah,
okay.
I hope, you know.
I have no doubt that there will be, yes.
I don't have the definite answers, right?
Right. The questions are more important than the answers sometimes.
Exactly, yeah.
Dr. Sebastian Brown, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
You've been listening to Sebastian Brown. His lecture is called Bearing Wisdom on the World. That's tonight at 7 p.m. Central Time. It's in the Munster University Center, Grand Ballroom 225 at the University of South Dakota.